Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is the Coast to Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch. Today is a show that I love doing sports. I love doing shows. This is going to be a little bit difficult because I have to talk about life and times of Miami Marlins star pitcher Jose Fernandez, who was tragically killed in a boating accident next Saturday with three of his friends. The boat turned over. He was one of the best pitchers in the league, a star pitcher ready to make a ton of money in the free agent market. It is really sad. He's got a kid on the way from his girlfriend. It's just really sad. We're going to talk to Connor Newcomb, who covers the Miami Marlins, to give us insight on the whole situation that went down. But first, I want to talk NFL football. I wasn't able to do the show yesterday. I did it today. I want to talk about two games, Minnesota and Carolina. And Minnesota beat Carolina 22-10. They beat him up, and they completely took Cam Newton out of his game. They didn't let him do much, and they did enough to win. I thought they were solid. Kyle Rudolph was big, as usual. Carolina missed a couple opportunities, too. They blew a couple opportunities, and they only had one real scoring drive. Carolina was up 10-2, and then Minnesota took over the entire game. Now, they didn't have Foster playing, so that kind of hurt their running game. So Minnesota really could load up. They were able to sack Cam Newton in the end zone for safety. Once that happened, it was just all Minnesota after that. They completely shut out the Carolina Panthers. And I just love the pressure they get on their passer. I believe right now, at this point, they're the best team in the NFC after three games. Of course, that's going to change. Just from my eye test, completely. Special teams, after they had a special teams return, defensively, they're good. Bradford is rejuvenated his career. I wonder if this is going to be like a Jim Plunkett situation with Dan Bradford. He played real well, and just they're 3-0. And Carolina's 1-2, and I think Carolina's going to have to get real serious. They're a little too playful on the field. They have to get real serious. They're one of the best teams in the NFL, and I believe that Carolina is still going to get together. But Minnesota is the best team in the NFC. I got them the contender. And the other contenders is New England. They beat up on the Houston Texans. They did what they had to do. But the other contender is the Super Bowl champs, the Denver Broncos. They haven't gone nowhere. Trevor Siemian throws four touchdown passes. I mean, he's throwing them deep. He's not meant just managing a game. He's laying some, dropping dimes out there. He dropped a dime out there to Emmanuel Sanders, passing the flat for another touchdown to Sanders, and then the dagger to Demetrius Thomas to finish him off. I just was so impressed with how he controlled the game. And you know, they got that great defense and that secondary shutting A.J. Green down completely. And then when you have Siemian going 22 for 35, 312 yards and four TDs, you know you're going to dominate. And they're still the best team in the league until further notice. We are awaiting the call in from Connor Newcomb from SB Nation in Miami to talk about the tragic death of Jose Fernandez. And they had a last text message from his friend saying that Jose went on a boat because he was stressed out. It was at night. I'm pretty sure it was dangerous. And the text, and his friend said, well, I'm not ready. The other friend said, be careful. And the other friend text back saying, well, I'm okay. Well, I'm not ready to die yet. We're okay. But they weren't. The boat capsized, turned over, and they all died. And it was really tragic because he was one of the best young pitchers in the major leagues. He was the rising star of stars. And he was a Met killer, and they played the Mets. And it seems like the Mets are in the wrong place at the wrong time, trying to fight for a wild card, and the Marlins on a holy mission to win every single game to honor their teammate. D. Gordon hits a home run. It was really, really, really emotional. And, you know, we have him on now. Okay. We have him on. We are live with Marlins, Miami Marlins writer Connor Newcomb. It's unfortunate I have to bring you on at this time with the passing of Jose Fernandez, but just tell the audience, first of all, I want to know what happened. I want to know the details because you're down there in Miami. What happened?
Yeah, Ron, thanks for having me on. I mean, details are kind of iffy still. There was a Yahoo Sports story put out pretty late last night, actually. Really a long-form story that wanted to encompass the entire episode from Sunday morning all the way until the ceremonies last night. But I think the short synopsis, because if you get into it too deep, there might be some details that still haven't been solved. Jose, you know, was just maybe feeling down, maybe in a bad place. Wanted to go on his boat early Sunday morning. Talks that he may have had a fight with his girlfriend. And really what just happened is he got a couple of his friends together. They were telling him, you know, this isn't a good idea. This isn't safe. That fourth friend, the text messages you were talking about that showed up in that article, shows him saying, you know, make sure you guys are safe. Apparently that fourth friend had the guys on the boat turn on the Find My iPhone app so he could track where they were going on the boat to make sure they were safe. And apparently that friend fell asleep at about 3 a.m. and 3:30 a.m. is when the crash happened. So, again, that friend didn't even know, according to this Yahoo Sports story, that it had happened until the morning. And apparently just too much speed was involved. It was too dark. They hit some rocks and the boat flipped over. Again, we're even after that long-form story, we're still waiting on a lot more information.
And I want to talk about his life beyond the fact he was a great pitcher. Tell the audience he tried to defect from Cuba three times, and also tell my audience about how he helped his family.
Yeah, so when he was 15 years old is when he finally made it to the States from Cuba, I believe. That was in 2008 when he was finally successful. But that was his fourth attempt, actually, getting to the States. He had three unsuccessful attempts with some members of his family to get here. But finally, the fourth attempt is when he got here. But actually, on that fourth attempt was probably the most dangerous of them all. At one point in that boat ride, his mother actually fell overboard. He jumped in immediately and rescued her. And kept her alive, and they both made it to America, made it to Florida successfully. And then, I mean, just a great story that he would come to Florida, went to high school in the Tampa area, was obviously a great baseball player, and then, you know, not exactly the hometown team because, you know, you got the Rays in Tampa, but still the Marlins down in Miami drafting him. Big Cuban-American community, obviously, in Miami. So
yes.
Fans immediately fell in love with Jose having that Cuban connection.
Wow, that is really, really sad. He was one of the best pitchers in the league, the young star. He was going to make a lot of money in the free agent market. Tell my audience about how his teammates, of course they were sad, but what kind of teammate he was.
I mean, he was the guy that was picking everyone up at all times when they were down. I mean, of course, he's a starting pitcher, so he's only playing once every 5 days. But, you know, there's pitchers in the league who they'll pitch their 1 out of 5 days, and the other 4 days they're sitting in the back of the dugout, maybe they're in the clubhouse, you know, they're just minding their own business. Every single game, Jose, even when he wasn't pitching, was on the top step of the dugout, cheering everybody on. He was in the game every pitch. Teammates loved him, loved the energy he brought. I mean, you could see it last night. I mean, all the entire team gathered around the mound where they had his number 16 spray painted. Before and after the game, they gathered around the mound, paid their respects. And that was just what was caught on camera, but a writer got a picture of hours after the game. Pretty much all fans had left. It was pretty much just team employees there, and the entire team returned back to the mound to have, you know, their little personal moment, really with the place he loved being the most, which is on that mound.
Definitely. They really showed the most respect by really beating up on the Mets. D. Gordon, when he hit that home run, I did get a little emotional watching that. That was tough. I mean, the way he showed homage by batting right-handed and batting left-handed, his normal stance, hitting the ball out, and then how Jason Bort played well. The team really showed respect by winning.
Yeah, I mean, it really seemed like it couldn't have gone any other way last night. Maybe definitely the moment of the year in baseball, one of the most surreal moments I've ever seen. I mean, it was like a movie script. D. Gordon, obviously he had an 80-game suspension this season, so he's only played half a season really. But that was his first home run of the season, and of course we've got 6 games left. So the fact that he hits, you know, not a power hitter at all, even in batting practice when guys hit the ball a lot further than they usually would in games, he said last night that home run that he hit was a great shot to right field. He said he'd never hit a ball that far, even in batting practice. And his first home run of the year comes the day after one of his best friends, Jose Fernandez, dies in that terrible accident. So, I mean, he, rounding the bases, he was starting to tear up. And when he got back to the dugout after that home run, I mean, the first batter of the game for the Marlins, too, he hit that home run. And when he got back to the dugout, I mean, all that emotion came out. He was crying. Everyone was hugging him in the dugout. It was just a special moment.
You know what? Unfortunately, I believe the Mets are at the wrong place at the wrong time because the Miami Marlins are on a holy mission to win every single game out. I think this is a bad spot for the Mets, and they're trying to get a wild card.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because although the Marlins' playoff chances are almost zero. I believe they're not officially out of the wild card race yet. It would take something crazy like them winning out and those other three teams, the Mets, Cardinals, and Giants, basically losing almost all the rest of their games. But after that D. Gordon home run last night, I mean, you never know what could happen. But it's probable the Marlins won't be in the playoffs. But, I mean, yeah, the Mets, they're going to run into a tough team to beat right now in games they need to win to make the playoffs, and it's going to be tough to beat these Marlins over the next few days. And I think the really sad part about this happening this time this season is this was the turnaround season for Miami. I mean, they haven't been a contender in a while. And I mean, they're sitting at exactly 500, 78-78. They've had a pretty bad September record-wise, but through July and August, I mean, they were right there contending for a playoff spot. So, I mean, this season was supposed to be the season that fans remembered. Wow, 2016, we turned it around, and after that, we started being real contenders. But instead, just the Jose Fernandez stuff is all that people are going to remember from 2016.
Yeah, unfortunately, but now where do you go from here? Do you have any young studs? I know you're not going to have a Jose Fernandez come up, but do you have any young stud pitchers coming up in the minor leagues that can maybe come up next year that could really keep the team going, keep this momentum going?
I mean, they had a lot of injuries pitching-wise this year. A guy, Wei-Yin Chen, they signed in the offseason, gave him a 4-year deal. He missed a lot of time on the disabled list. Jose Urena is a very young pitcher, I believe in his very early 20s. He can touch 97, 98 on the radar gun. He hasn't had a great year, but the Marlins, they like his promise to become one of their top starters. But, I mean, it's not like they're losing, you know, a middle-of-the-line starting pitcher. They're losing a bona fide ace who is contending for a Cy Young. And, of course, all the talk has been, you know, what the Marlins are losing in the clubhouse, what the community, the Miami community is losing. but it's also what that team is losing and how much talent he had. I mean, he's a pitcher that, you know, maybe comes around once every 10 years, that kind of talent. So it's basically impossible to replace what he gave to the Marlins on and off the field.
Definitely, definitely. I just want to thank you. And I would love for you to come back when the playoffs start, because you actually have seen the Washington Nationals. They're in your division, so they're in the playoffs. So I would love for you to come back whenever you're free.
Yeah, no problem. That'd be great.
Thanks a lot. That was Connor Newcomb from SB Nation. He did a terrific job under the circumstances. He gave you great details, details I didn't even know. Oh, this is really, really, really sad because of how great he was. And, you know, he's got a kid that's not even born, that's not even going to see her dad. And it was really, really tough. But as far as the major leagues are concerned, they are in the wild card. Miami is in the wild card race. Barely, but you never know if they run the table. And then St. Louis and San Francisco have struggled. The Mets played the Phillies, who played up tough recently. And City Field, they're going to Philadelphia, and they would love nothing more to ruin the Mets season. So you never know as far as the wild card team is concerned. In the American League, Cleveland is Cleveland. They clinched the division. Boston should have clinched the division. They are going to win the division. Texas clinched. So you have those two teams. Toronto and Baltimore, if they can, they play each other at Toronto. So they're going to beat each other up, which gives Detroit a chance and Seattle a chance. And Houston, a puncher's chance. But Detroit, they got to beat up on Cleveland. Cleveland beat them yesterday and won the Clinton division in there in Comerica Park in Detroit. So they're going to have to get revenge, beat up on Cleveland, and try to get in to take advantage of Toronto and Baltimore. And Baltimore has to go to Yankee Stadium. So that's tough. And then the Boston Red Sox play the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. So the Yankees are going to have a huge impact on who's getting in. They could really ruin some seasons coming up. Now we're going to go to college football. And the real game of the week was Florida and Tennessee. I'm going to get to that. But first, the LSU coaching situation. Les Miles was fired, and he should have gotten fired. After losing 18-13 to Auburn, they had a better team than Auburn. Auburn fought hard. I love how hard they played for Gus Malzahn. They played hard for Gus Malzahn, and they won on 6 field goals. I think Gus Malzahn did a smart thing. He sat back, looked at his team. He said, my offense stinks. I have an average quarterback, ordinary receivers, a decent running game. I'll game plan the heck around that, but I'm going to really just live and die off my defense, which is really good. And they kicked six field goals. And LSU had a chance. If they could have kept all their timeouts to win the game, Danny Etling had a last-second touchdown pass that was overturned because he just, when they hiked the ball, no time left because you didn't have enough timeouts. And that was the stupidity of Les Miles. Les Miles lost, I don't want to, lost his mojo after, I would say, 2012. They beat Alabama in the regular season at that game. Then they got shut out by Bama, 21-0 in the national championship game. When they had Odell Beckham, the Honey Badger, Peterson, I believe Jeremy Hill. They were loaded, and they lost to Alabama. They got shut out by Alabama, and he has never, ever been the same. They lost to Notre Dame in the bowl, for goodness sake. They just underachieved the last 4 years, and it was time. He did a good job before that, 2012, but after the national championship, he did win when they beat Ohio State. He was never the same. The team was never the same. He could never run the right plays. They ran and it was too prehistoric, and they're going to clean house. I believe they're going to try to get Tom Herman. But if Houston is invited to the Big 12, Tom Herman is probably going to stay. And now you're looking at Lane Kiffin. I don't know if they're going to go that far out. He's a great game planner. He was a moron at Tennessee and a moron at USC, but he went to Alabama, and maybe he matured under the leadership of Nick Saban, and maybe if he gets another chance. I mean, he's a good football mind. If he gets another chance, or you could get Bobby Petrino, who's probably happy at Louisville. I don't think he's going to leave. Who had similar bad situations. I'm not sure who else is out there, but I know they're going to look at Herman. It's a great job. You get the best recruits. There's no competition in Louisiana. You're in the SEC. You already have a reputation for getting full recruits wanting to come there. So you get the right coach, you're going to be right there with Alabama, if not past Alabama. If you get a Tom Herman, watch out. They're going to get an offensive mind because they're already getting good defensive players. The next game was the Florida-Tennessee game, and I picked Tennessee to win. And to start the game, I was a little ticked off watching Tennessee get an unnecessary roughness penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, to start the kickoff and set the tone of just drop balls and poor play and Florida going up and down the field. They were up 21-3. But in the third quarter, Tennessee got a score, which was big. Joshua Dobbs, who had played bad and had drops, threw a touchdown pass to Jalen Hurd, and it opened up the floodgates. And then Joshua Dobbs imposes will. Sometimes players can take over games, even though it's a team sport. And Joshua Dobbs took over, threw another touchdown pass to Ethan Wolf, a 20-yarder, then a 67-yarder to take the lead from Juwan Jennings, who bobbled the ball, grabbed it up, ran down the sidelines, and they went up 21-24. Then Joshua Dobbs threw another touchdown pass to Josh Malone, 42 yards. They're up 31-21. And then his final touchdown pass, which capped the day off, a 5-yard touchdown pass to Aaron he rammed the middle for 5 yards to score. He had 4 touchdown passes and 1 run. He was terrific. I'm going to tell you something else. The Tennessee defense shut Florida down. Applebee couldn't do anything. Also, Applebee couldn't do anything. It was 3-and-out after 3-and-out after 3-and-out. And when you're playing in that heat, that'll get to you after a while. And they completely shut Florida down and shut Florida up. I was a little tired of Florida talking and yapping before the game about they own them or what they're going to do to Tennessee. And that, you're going to Tennessee and you're a program like Florida that's trying to get back to where they used to be. You're not there yet. So the defense was solid, but the defense got tired because the offense kept getting shut down. You're not there yet. McElwain will have that team there, but they're not quite there yet. And Tennessee has an opportunity to make noise. They got to go to Georgia, which is a tough game. Then they get Alabama at home. They have LSU coming up. So they have an opportunity to really make some noise. And this could be a program-changing win because Tennessee's always come up a little short in big games. They're getting better. And Bush Jones has got them better each year. But then something would happen where they would lose a goofy game in Florida or they'd lose a game they shouldn't. Now, you know, after a slow start, they're 4-0. And now they can look and say, you know, I think they can play with anybody. And they just have to get out of the SEC East, even if they lose a game or two. And if they win the SEC East, with 1 or 2 losses or go undefeated and beat the West team, San Francisco, they rematched Alabama and won that, they're going to play in the playoffs. And they have an opportunity to play for a second national championship. So Tennessee's still in the mix, but they have a long way to go before we get to that because you got to go to Georgia and play. And Georgia got annihilated by Ole Miss. And Georgia's going to be furious. They're going to be ticked off. Kirby Smart's going to have that team fired up. That's a tough game for Tennessee. And finally, Arkansas and Texas A&M. I thought Arkansas had a chance to finally get over the hump and beat Texas A&M. After a 10-10 game, Arkansas scores 8-yard touchdown by Raleigh Williams, who had fumbled previously in the red zone. But then A&M, with 29 seconds left, this is really inexcusable by Arkansas. Trevor Knight runs up the middle for a 48-yard touchdown with 29 seconds left. Your worst-case scenario is you want to hold them to 3 points. But no, they let Trevor Knight, who had previously scored on a 42-yard touchdown run, run up the middle untouched. That was ridiculous. That tied the score. But then Arkansas goes all the way down the field, and they end up not scoring on fourth down. I thought they, on a review, they might have had a touchdown, but the review showed it wasn't a touchdown. They get stopped on fourth down. Trevor Knight throws the ball to Josh Reynolds for a 92-yard touchdown, and that was a game. I'm going to tell you why that was a game. Arkansas had five opportunities in the red zone. They scored one touchdown and one field goal. And when they blew all those opportunities, they put Texas A&M away, and Trevor Knight threw that long touchdown pass to Josh Reynolds, 92 yards, I wrote in my notes, dagger. I didn't have to watch the game anymore, even though it was only a 7-point lead. I knew Arkansas was done, and Texas A&M scored three more times to make it 45-24. And that was game. And A&M is tough. Kevin Sumlin has righted the ship. Trevor Knight has righted the place he needed to be after leaving Oklahoma. And Texas A&M, they're the team. They're one of the they match up well with Alabama because they have the passing game, they have the big receivers, they run downhill so that Alabama has an honor to run. They got an experienced quarterback, and their defense, they got two defensive ends. Myles Garrett is as good as they come. They have two great defensive ends, and they play downhill. Their new defensive coordinator has them playing physical. But, of course, when you play Alabama, you got to go 15 rounds. And if they're willing to go 15 rounds in Tuscaloosa, they would have a chance. The SEC is exciting. Every week I look forward to watching it. Now, the Big Ten gets exciting this week with Michigan and Wisconsin. The Big Ten toward the end is going to get excited because Michigan plays Michigan State. Michigan State plays Ohio State, even though Michigan State laid an egg. Wisconsin's got some tough games coming up with Ohio State and Michigan. Ohio State has some tough games coming up. So they're all going to beat each other up, so you'll have a true champion in that division. So Saturday, I'm going to talk a lot about college football and a little NFL football and some Major League Baseball.